Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's time for the show that brings the magic right to your speakers. Ears Up!
Welcome, everybody. Ears Up Podcast. We are here. We're ready to entertain you because, you know, let's be honest, there's really not a whole lot of cool stuff going on in the world right now. And we need all the help that we can get. So we're here to talk about a lot of fun stuff today. Actually, we have a lot to cover. We have Terrence with part three, I believe, of Walt's Nine Old Men. Coverage.
We're a third of the way through. It's good.
Is breaking coverage. I have a movie review, half of a movie review, and I'll explain that in a minute. What else? We have feedback. We have Disney news to talk about, and you know, it will shock nobody that Disney has once again blown up the internet with plans that they want to charge people extra money for stuff. So we're going to talk about that after all of this shenanigans and all this kind of fun stuff that we do here on the show. And we have opinions. Everyone has opinions. I'm trying to get a special guest on to help us sort of cover and break down what the essentially the absence of fast passes are now, what that means for the park.
Surprise guest.
Yeah, I don't know if it'll happen, but you know, I'm working on it. It'll be good. I'm excited about it. You can find us on social media. Oh, and we also have a Spectro Time segment. That's why Jane. Jeremy's here. Hi, Jer. I forgot about
Hi,
you.
Hi, Jace.
I forgot about my buddy, my news buddy.
Yeah.
Sorry, man.
I know. I've become so ubiquitous that you forget about me now.
Well, yeah. Everything good in my life I forget about.
Aw.
Yeah, Jeremy. I don't know. Find us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest. Any feedback on the show goes to Taryn at earsup-podcast.com. Show suggestions go to Terrence at earsup-podcast.com. You could say hi.
Hi. That was Taryn because Bev's not there.
Bev's not. Of course Bev's not here. Once the show starts, Bev leaves. I need a truly. I can't handle it. And anything else comes to me, Jason, earsup-podcast.com. You guys, Disneyland is still open, and especially with the announcements that are happening right now about the My Genie Magic Plus or whatever it is, ConciEars will help you sort all that stuff out. ConciEars.com, ConciEars. If you want to do like that Magic Genie My Plus thing or whatever, that's an add-on that ConciEars can do for you. They can help you figure all that stuff out. They can help you figure out how to work with the system. I know everybody's sort of learning it right now, but they will definitely sort you out. If you want to go on a cruise, if you want to go to Disney World, if you want to go to Disneyland, ConciEars is the best place to get your tickets, the best place to help plan your trips, the best place to get reservations for rides. Now it's going to be something to try to get used to, saying, oh, I need a ride reservation and a friggin' brunch reservation, and a bathroom reservation, and I need to reserve my reserving spot for my bathroom reservation. ConciEars can help you do all that. So check them out, ConciEars.com. Taryn, do we have feedback?
We certainly do.
I love feedback, man. I'm going to give Bev some feedback when she's back.
Not everybody loves feedback.
No, okay, all right.
Hello, Ears Up.
Hi.
Oh, sorry, this is from Stephanie.
Hi, Stephanie.
Let's try this again. Hello, Ears Up.
Hi. I said hi, Stephanie. Let's not be pushy.
I hope you are all well. I apologize in advance for my totally random questions and feedback. I just figured if I'm going to write, I may as well ask all my questions.
How does an internal combustion engine work?
My main question for you is, I seem to remember that Beverly...
Is a question for Bev?
Yes, it is.
Okay, well, skip it. Wait for her to come back, and we'll continue.
She's right here. She's right here.
Okay.
Hi.
Hey,
hi.
Bev. What's up? We just started the show. It's fine.
I know. I'm sorry. We're having my splitter is janky, but I have a new one, and I don't remember where I put it.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, then, why are you asking?
I didn't ask. Go ahead. Ask a question for Beverly, Taryn. Go
okay,
ahead.
Okay, this is still Stephanie speaking. My main question for you is, I seem to remember that Beverly had taken a trip to Disneyland at one point and stayed the night somewhere near the Grapevine. I'm wondering where she stayed and if she had any feedback or tips about that. I tried finding the episode it was on, but didn't have any luck. I'm from Sacramento area and plan to split my trip in two when I head that way next month. I don't plan on staying long, so I don't care about staying somewhere fancy. I just don't want to stay anywhere particularly scary or gross since I'll be with my kids.
I think you got both of those along the five. Not fancy and scary and gross. Bev, where did you stay?
I actually just stayed there again this past week.
Oh.
I can't remember the name. It's a Microtel by Wyndham, and it's in Arvin.
I think you're making these words up. Microtel.
Yeah, it's like it's a really small hotel room. Like it's obviously.
You don't say.
Yeah, that's weird how the name is the actual definition of the thing also.
Yeah, those prefixes, man, they'll get you.
It's so weird, though, isn't it?
I've never hated you more.
That's all right.
That's actually not true either. Yeah.
Okay, so a town called Arvin. There you go, Stephanie. Okay.
I have never heard of Arvin.
No one has.
And the chipmunks?
That's where this is where all I stayed. Right. It's the Microtel Inn and Suites by Wyndham Wheeler Ridge. But it says it's in Arvin, but it's literally right off the five. It's not more than like 2-minute detour.
Would you recommend it?
Yes, it was $60 and it was cheap and there were no bugs.
How far down the five was it? Like I don't, you know, without looking on a map, I don't know. In relation to Harris Ranch, how about that?
It's past Harris, like it's past like Button Willow, like it's literally right before you get to the Grapevine. It's
okay,
like you know where the outlets are?
Yeah, the Tejon like Pass there. Or whatever. Okay. Oh, okay. So it's like right
too far.
It's so. Sorry, can I ask a question to Stephanie? Is that her name?
Yes.
Okay, so if she's coming down the 99 to the 5. When you hit the Grapevine, you have what, an hour and a half? Mm-hmm. Hour and 45 left.
Yeah,
of a drive you've already been driving 6.5 hours on or so at
but
that
it's,
point.
It's
that's
honestly,
not splitting it in half.
It's the worst part of the drive.
No, it's not.
I think it's the best part.
It's the best part because you're almost there, dude. Once you get to the friggin' Grapevine, you're like, let's go, baby. I got to pedal to the metal up this hill, and then you don't stop going down, and suddenly you're doing 90 going down the hill. You're like, whoa.
That's where your second wind kicks in, is right at that Grapevine.
Yeah, if you want to split it in half, you're talking Harris Ranch.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I love this like hyper Bay Area specific talk for our global podcast.
So you stop at Harris Ranch and your whole hotel smells like slaughtered cow.
Yeah, that's fine. But it's also, it's more the $150 a night that I don't want to do. Yeah, I mean, you know, look, to each his own. If you want to, because it's only an hour and a half extra, I guess I would drive it. But I don't know. For me, staying on the truck route, I don't want to do it. But there you go, Stephanie. Arvin. A Microtel.
Microtel.
Yeah, which sounds like something should be on CSI. I saw his Microtel.
Or in Marvel Land.
I knew it. Yeah, the Ant-Man's hotel is a Microtel.
She has more questions, though.
Oh, my God.
I'm also curious, what ride, if any, do you like just because you go on it with your kids? For me, I really like Mater's Junkyard Jamboree.
None.
I laugh whenever you guys talk crap, I'll say, about it. Because it's a ride I would never have gone on by myself as an adult, but I can't miss it now. We all love going on it as a family.
Okay.
So let's stop there. What is do you guys have a ride that you'd like to go on just because you're with your kids?
Terrence, what do you think?
No.
Okay. Beverly?
No, maybe Little Mermaid. That's probably the only one that I would say is maybe Mermaid. Besides that, I could care less.
Okay. Bev?
I like Mater, but I don't think I like it because of Abby. I think I just like it because I'm a child.
Yeah. But do you have one that you normally wouldn't like?
No. Yes, the teacups. And the only time I will ride that is if Sam's not there to ride it with her.
Okay. All right. I mean, we've only been to Disneyland like twice, I think, with Alice, and everything was just like, here's a bag of meat that we're taking on all of our rides. And it's like,
I mean, I did go with her on that.
I just got that. I'm like, why are you carrying meat around? Oh, your kid.
Yeah. I mean, she doesn't like, you know, she doesn't
Bev
know.
Bev does carry meat around. Yeah. Bag of salami.
That's right. Bev has
hot
pocket salami.
Salami, baby.
That I willingly ate at.
Yeah,
out
you
of.
Know
I
what?
Was like, yeah,
that
I don't care
salami
how
was
this is.
That salami was all sweaty and like life changing though, because when you need some protein, it's there.
3 o'clock. Can I reach in that hot bag of salami and take a few pieces? Yeah.
I actually think that was like your literal sentence.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, it was body temperature salami at that point.
Oh, that's so gross.
It was so gross. Look, I didn't bring any salami home. That salami was consumed. Not just by us.
No, yeah, for
as
sure.
As in my family.
Anything else from Stephanie?
Yes. I also want to say I hope people are listening to Scraping the Vault. I love Audrey. She's so funny and enjoyable to listen to.
Nice. All right. Scraping the Vault, kids. Well, listen to it.
We all deserve a little more Audrey in our lives.
Oh,
In-depth
nice.
Is great as well, of course.
Well, yeah, of course.
And I'd love to know if there are any Jace and Jer shirts in the works. I'm so glad there's been more Disney news lately. Thank you for sticking through it throughout the pandemic and closures, etc. And just in general, thanks for all the work you guys put into entertaining us. Wish you all the best, Stephanie.
Oh, thanks, Stephanie. When you said Jace and Jeremy shirts, Jeremy almost visibly threw up.
She didn't say Jeremy. She said Jace.
Jace and
Jer.
Yeah, right.
What would that be? Just like a shirt with our faces right on it.
It just says our names.
Just Jace and Jer.
Yeah, I don't know. You've been threatening to make a couple of Jace's Place shirts, and you haven't done it. I'm sort of disappointed.
Jace, I forgot about Jace's Place. That's your bar.
You can sip on a brew.
You're going to have some eats and some sips and some bites at Jace's Place.
Yeah, and a nice brew, a nice brew, micro yeah. brew, which I don't know if you know, but micro means small.
So it's just a tiny little glass of beer.
Yeah, yeah. You can get them at a microtel, which is a smaller version of a hotel. And when you check in, they give you a micro dot, which is very different.
There is a PS.
Oh, PS. All right. I
almost don't want to read it.
Why?
You'll know why.
Because you said it. Now you have to.
Well, I'm going to.
All right.
PS. Terrence's retheming of Critter Country was the best.
Oh, yeah. No, we don't need to hear this.
I really wish they weren't changing Splash Mountain, as I truly love it as is. But if they use Terrence's ideas for that area, I could definitely get excited about it.
Taryn, I'm sorry. I missed the first part of that. Can you read it again, please?
Yeah, you were too busy clapping over it.
I just deleted it.
Yeah.
Sorry.
All right. Well, Steph, thanks. That was really nice of you. I appreciate you taking the time to email us. That's very sweet.
It was very
nice. You can support the show. Head over to Etsy.com/shop/Coveyears. All of the Mai Tai glasses have shipped. Everyone's Mai Tai glasses either are at your house or we'll be there tomorrow. I have about 8 left. So if you want to grab a couple, you can go ahead and do that over there. Patreon.com/earsup. That's the absolute best way to support us. You can join in as little as $2 a month. Help keep the lights on and everything. But at $5 a month, that's where the cool stuff comes in, because stuff like The Secret Show, which we're going to be recording tonight after this show. So check that out too. You get a whole backlog. You get your own RSS feed. That's how that works. You join, you get an RSS feed, put it in one of these little podcasting apps, and all of the shows that you've missed before just load right up. So you can just listen to nothing but us if you wanted to. Okay, I'm going to do my film review. And just to remind everybody, this is what I want to do is for us to go through all of the full-length Disney animation classics. Or all of them, really, classics or not, to see if their story like still holds up over time. You know what I mean? And I think we found that sometimes they really don't. Most of the time, they're sort of like, this is really boring. I don't think kids today would really enjoy watching the old, you know, Snow White or whatever. So the next one in line, we've taken a huge break from this, and I apologize. We're trying to get back on track with that. The next one in line was Ichabod and Mr. Toad. This, I've seen the Ichabod, Legend of Sleepy Hollow one before. I don't think I've ever seen Mr. Toad. And even though the movie is called Ichabod and Mr. Toad, Mr. Toad starts first. It's very weird. It should have been Mr. Toad and Ichabod, but that doesn't really, that sounds like a, I don't know, a buddy comedy from the 90s. So it's sort of long. I mean, it's an hour, but there's sort of a lot to talk about. So I'm going to split it into two. So I'm just going to talk about Mr. Toad, and then we're going to get into Ichabod on the next show. I think that's the best way to do it because we have a lot of stuff to cover, like I said. So watching these old movies is like it's a trip, man, because it's at that time of like rolling all the credits at the beginning of the movie with a jaunty little tune to make the credits a little less bearable, which for me is hard to sit through because it's not really what's done these days. And I feel like kids would have a hard time sitting through it, too. We're like, here's all these people that you don't really know. Bing Crosby sings the song and also acts as the narrator for the Ichabod Crane story, which I'm not really a big Bing Crosby guy, and so I'm not really looking forward to that part. Mr. Toad is the is an adaptation of the Basil Rathbone. No, excuse me. Basil Rathbone is the narrator for the story of Mr. Toad from The Wind in the Willows, written by Kenneth Graham. So we got that situated now. Knowing what we know now about the history of the Disney parks and the company, it's sort of neat to watch the credits because you see a lot of familiar names. Even though I just said it's hard for me to sit through, it is sort of neat because we have this history, right? So the movie came out in 1949, so this is pre-Disneyland. Our friend Oob Iwerks is credited with something called Special Processes, and Claude Coates, Mary Blair, and John Hinch are listed for color and styling. Ollie Johnston and Ward Kimball are part of the directing animators team. Mark Davis and Don Lusk were character animators. So we had a lot of heavy hitters on this movie. The movie opens up on a darkened window. A light turns on, and we see some stained glass artwork. We push in through the window and enter a library. Only then do you notice that the stained glass was animated, but the library is real. They did a really good job sort of separating those two. The narrator asks, who is the most fabulous literary character of all time? Oliver Twist? Sherlock Holmes? No, the narrator says, we're all wrong and it's Toad. Damn, we were wrong. We jump into an opened book of The Wind in the Willows and meet Toad. He's an adventurer, a sucker for fads, apparently, and only has three close friends. It's a terrible, terrible shame. We're only 3 minutes into the movie, and I think it would be really tough for kids to care about this at this point. I mean, who knows who Oliver Twist even is? There's these weird references like that. I mean, Sherlock Holmes, yeah, sure, but Oliver Twist? No kid's really going to care this much. But we're moving now. There's no turning back. River Rat, one of Toad's three pals, gets a letter from the postman, who's an actual man. This is one of the first instances I can remember of humans interacting with animals on a same level rather than trying just to eat or kill them or chase them. Like we're used to, you know, Tom and Jerry cartoons of like, you only see the lower calves of the house lady, you know, chasing Tom and Jerry around. But this is like an actual postman bending down, giving a rat a letter. And I thought it was very funny. I've never seen this, like I said, or if I had, it was so long ago, I don't really remember. So when the outside of Toad Hollow comes on screen, which is where Toad lives, it made me feel sort of a bit more nostalgia and respect for Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. The ride looks just like the outside of this house from this movie, and it's an imaginary wonder, and it should be protected at all costs. Like, usually, when we talk about maybe sometimes replacing rides in Fantasyland, I'll go like, oh, Mr. Toad, like, who cares, right? But it's a friggin' exact copy of the outside of Toad Hollow. It looks cool, and I think I like it a little bit more now. More in the human-animal interaction realm. Apparently, Toad's lust for life has him roaming all over the country, just doing damage to everything he sees somehow. I assume he's a reckless driver, but that's an inference and, you know, whatever. Anyway, humans are beating on the door of Toad Hollow, demanding Toad pay for damages. Mac Badger, Toad's Scottish accountant and friend, is dealing with it as best he can, but he's a tire old Scot and knows Toad has no more money left. He's broke, so he's at risk of losing Toad Hollow. Enter Toad. We pick him up ripping through the English countryside in a canary yellow horse cart pulled by a horse named Cyril. He's just blasting around, singing about going nowhere in particular, which is sort of reminiscent of that old country song I've Been Everywhere by Jeff Mack, and then, of course, famously covered by Hank Snow and then Johnny Cash. Like, he's just talking about different towns and cities and villages in England they're on their way to, but then he's saying nowhere in particular. And they're just wrecking greenhouses and ripping through laundry lines. They're just being really cool, to be honest. Rat and Mole try to convince him to give up his horse and cart, but Toad refuses until he sees a motor car. and literally gets hypnotized by this modern invention, and Rat and Mole call it Motomania. And they have no choice but to lock Toad inside Toad Hollow until he gets over his new fad infatuation. But Toad escapes. He sneaks out, steals a motor car, and then was arrested. And Rat and Mole and Mac Badger were forced to testify against him. Toad, acting as his own counsel, calls his horse Cyril, who spins a great tale in rhyme, he rhymes it, about how they saw a car driven by weasels. It stops at a pub. Toad and Cyril approach the pub, wherein Toad proceeds to huff the exhaust fumes. Literally, he's huffing exhaust fumes and getting super spun out on it. Before you know it, Todd has traded Toad Hall for this red motor car from the weasels. Toad then brings up Mr. Winky, the publican, as his witness, and Mr. Winky turns on Toad, claiming he tried to sell him a stolen car, and that was it for Toad. He's sentenced to 20 years in prison. That's it. So far, none of this makes any sense to me, especially comparing it with the ride. But that Christmas, Toad was locked away in the highest tower of the prison. Cyril, dressed up as Toad's grandma, smuggled an outfit in for Toad, allowing Toad to escape. The cops go ballistic. Spotlights are everywhere as the search for Toad began, which, of course, why wouldn't you just, you know, freak the entire town out after some guy who stole a car? But, you know, whatever. After almost being caught, Toad steals a train, because of course he does, and eventually jumps off to hide. Winding up at Mole and Rat's house, he learns that Mr. Winky was partying at Toad Hall with the weasels, meaning he really did trade his house for the motor car. His friends were pleased and worked hard to steal the deed from Mr. Winky. After a big chase involving a lot of knives and paper airplanes, somehow, Toad got the deed back and he was exonerated. Facing no punishment for escaping, Toad claimed he was reformed until he buzzes Toad Hall with his new airplane, co-piloted by Cyril, and they literally fly off into the sunset. And that's how this chapter ends of this movie. I decided to watch a ride-through of the ride just to see how it compared, and they really just get right into the action, man. The ride, if you remember, it starts with Mac Badger's paperwork, then jumps right into weasels swinging from the chandeliers in Toad Hall. But now we know why there are weasels in Toad Hall, after actually seeing the reference, which, you know, obviously takes no real genius to come up with, but they're there. Then the cops are after you for some reason. You run across a farmer that looks like some kind of Al Jaffe creation from Mad Magazine with his sheep in a wagon. You drive your car into a bunch of explosives again somehow, swing past Mr. Winky at his pub, tossing two pints around and around at the bar. That's who that is. I had no idea the reference. Then you were in court. You're pronounced guilty. You go to prison where you're hit by a train and wake up in hell. The prosecutor's there, and so is a dragon, so that's fun. You spin sharply, and then suddenly you're back in Toad Hollow. So I guess the ride is based on what happened during Toad's time in the stolen car, which I guess I never really knew, or I guess I knew it, but I never realized really until watching the cartoon, like how many inferences were in there. So in my opinion, does Mr. Toad hold up today? Yeah, I think it does. Honestly, Toad comes off as a lovable character, and while kids today might not understand a time when cars were new and rare, when you would trade, you know, a multi-million dollar estate for one, or airplanes had two sets of paper wings, or horses could sing, the story moves along fairly quickly. The art is engaging, and while there's no real character arc, there doesn't need to be. It's fun, and I liked it, and it even made me want to read the book. So there.
Oh, wow.
So is hell supposed to be prison?
I don't think so. I mean, I haven't read the book, so I don't know if he actually goes to hell in the book. I have no idea. I'm just basing this 100% off the movie.
Okay.
Because in the movie, it's literally like he's in this car and then like, bam, he's in jail. That's it. Or he's arrested All or right. whatever. Yeah, it's bizarre. The movie's weird, man. But I really liked it. It was cool.
It makes me want to watch the movie. And this reminds me, I mean, as you were reading it and telling us about it, I'm like, this is like, it's like, yeah, this sounds like the ride.
Yeah, it's
like, what you just described was the ride, actually, you know?
Yeah.
So they did a good job, clearly.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. I want to read the story because I don't know where the dynamite comes in or the sheep guy or whatever, but it was weird, like, watching it and then going through the ride through and then seeing like Mr. Winky the barman like twisting pints around, you're like, oh, okay, I get this. I understand this now. He's the bad guy basically in all this. Yeah, it was cool. I would recommend you watching it.
Good job.
Wrong one.
Wait, show's over. Thanks for coming.
Thanks, everybody. Oh, so you can't do it there. You got to do it here. That's annoying. Okay, here we go.
The 21st Amendment Brewery's latest beer release, Tropical Brew Free or Die IPA, puts an island vacation in their whimsically designed cans. That's right, cans. This refreshing year-round release, Tropical IPA, is brewed with pale and Munich malts, brimming with Azaka, Citra Cryo, and Mosaic hops, and topped with a splash of pineapple flavor. The result is a clean, refreshing beer featuring a mix of sweet malt, balanced bitterness, fruit-forward hops, and a nice tropical vacation at the finish. Tropical Brew Free or Die IPA is available at your local good beer shop, neighborhood taproom, and anywhere else people come together to find great craft beer.
All right, Jer.
Join us as we unravel the magic behind some of Disney's most beloved pieces of music. It's Spectro Time.
This magic night, a million stars will play beside us, cast a spell of light, glimmering, shimmering, carouseling round the world.
Oh, hi, Jer. It's time, baby. It's Spectro Time.
Hi, Jace. This is, I realized this week that I haven't seen Spectro Magic the Parade in it's been over 11 years. That was the revelation I had this week.
And you're still obsessed after all these years.
It's like it ended yesterday. I haven't moved on at all. Time doesn't heal all wounds.
How come you don't play this essentially on repeat like you do with Illuminations on Spectro Radio?
First of all, I don't play Illuminations on repeat on Spectro Radio, so that's enough.
How dare you?
He texts me. He screenshots. He's like, it's playing again.
It's playing again.
We must listen to it at the same time every day because it does feel like I'm like, okay, I think I know this whole thing by heart by now.
Oh, lucky you. I mean, it's so wonderful that... I mean, are you just so happy that you're hearing it as often as
so
you are?
Happy.
Yes. I could increase it if you're really starting to like it a lot.
Thank you.
You would do that for us? That's nice, right?
Yeah.
I would do it for Taryn.
Oh.
You know what? You don't have to do that. I really appreciate it.
All right, what do we got going on today, Jer?
We're going to take a little trip back in time. Back to Epcot Center in 1992.
Wow.
That was a fun time.
Okay.
The park in 1992 was only 10 years old, and for the most part, the attractions were all their original versions. Spaceship Earth had one update, but most of the big marquee attractions like Living with the Land, Universe of Energy, World of Motion, Horizons, these are all running as they were on their opening days. The changes that the park had seen up until this point were not reconfigurations of original attractions, but rather the just addition of new attractions as the park was in its first decade. But many of the sponsorships that came with the opening day attractions were set for 10 years. We were on 10-year contracts.
Okay.
So now, 1992, they're all a lot of them are up. And in some instances, sponsors re-signed, and in others, they left. This gave Disney a chance to change or refresh shows that needed it. So we're in a time of flux.
Okay, a rebuilding period, as the losing sports team in the Bay Area would say.
Yes, exactly. Now, over in the land was a funny little show called Kitchen Cabaret that had been running since opening day. Kitchen Cabaret was sponsored by Kraft. It featured animatronic fruits, vegetables, and other foods performing a cabaret of music and comedy using primarily music in the style of the 1930s and 40s, sort of extolling the virtues of healthy eating. Take a listen, number one.
And now... the show that has the whole town cooking. The Kitchen Cabaret.
Direct from the silos of the Midwest, the Cereal Sisters.
We'd like to sing about a friend who has really come far. He started with some dough and then he rose to be a star. He is hot when he leads the bread and cereal group. And up and right, sir.
Speaking of me, let's tell him what happened down at the chicken coop, eh?
A hungry fox boldly walking through a hen house door.
Too bad for him. He met a hen who stood at 6'4".
He won't forget the licking
he got from that big chicken.
Now he gets his poultry from the store.
veggie, fruit, fruit, veggie, veggie, fruit, fruit, veggie, fruit, fruit, veggie, veggie, fruit.
I simply have to tell you that my friends who are singing are delectable. Meals are divine as long as you combine with fruit and
vegetables.
They're good for you, everyone. They make your meals a lot.
What are we listening to?
It's the fruit version of the Tiki Room.
The fruit version of the Tiki Room.
Oh.
Kind of loved every single moment of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was all right with
thing.
It.
That was the thing that happened.
Kitchen Cabaret is a legend. I mean, it ended in 92, and it is a legendary attraction. That Veggie Veggie Fruit Fruit song is now a part of the Epcot Forever show.
Oh, really?
And when it happens, everybody at Epcot's going veggie, veggie, fruit. Like, everybody loves it. It's like, it's Epcot lore, man. Like, it's legend now. Kitchen Cabaret was brought to us by many familiar Disney talents, such as Buddy Baker and X Atencio, who will be no stranger to Disney fans because they wrote the tune to what, Jason?
Haunted Mansion. No, Pirates.
Haunted Mansion.
Haunted Mansion. Yeah, that's right.
That's right. Grim Grinning Ghosts is by. They may have done Pirates too. Actually, now that I think about it, I can't remember, but they definitely did Grim Grinning Ghosts. Composer George Wilkins also worked on Kitchen Cabaret, though he never saw it in person. Its final product. George Wilkins has a long Disney resume, having worked on Horizons, Superstar Limo, California Screamin', It's Tough to Be a Bug, The Living Seas theme, Country Bear Vacation Hoedown, and the original Test Track theme, as well as this, Jason, number two.
We've come so far, yet there's so very far to go. We've watched our dreams become reality. We have tasted what the future holds in store for us.
Is this Sade?
And realize that we hold all the keys. And tomorrow's filled with promise, stretch forever. Our future's like a never-ending theme. Lives are joined together by the wonders of today, and a world we'll build together with our dreams.
That had nothing to do with food. I was like expecting some awesome food pun to come up.
Well, you recognize that song, of course, don't you?
No.
Oh, I guess someone didn't listen to my Music of Space Mountain Spectra Time segment.
No, I tune out, man.
That was a song called We've Come So Far. It was written as the theme song in the mid-70s. It wasn't the first song that showed up in Space Mountain, but like in the second iteration, it was the exit theme, and it lasted throughout the 80s.
Okay.
Now, that was voiced by Gloria Bellis. Keep her on your burner because she's coming back, all right? Bellis is not done with you, Petros.
All right. Put Bellis on the back burner.
Gloria Bellis. We're going to hear more from her later. So it's 1992, and Kraft pulls out of its the land sponsorship, with Nestle now signing on to support the pavilion. But another thing happened. Our understanding and attitudes about the foods we eat and the makeup of the food pyramid had evolved since 1982, and even before that, when they were making, you know, Kitchen Cabaret. So we have better understanding, and some of the messages about how much of certain foods we're supposed to eat weren't really relevant anymore. They weren't true. We've moved on with our understanding. So you've got a new sponsor. The show's information is out of date, and the cabaret style was less and less connecting with the audience.
Okay. No way.
So it's time for something new. And Imagineer Rolly Crump is in charge of the Epcot renewal of the Land Pavilion. You almost said that before. What did you say? What did you call it before?
Me?
You said there was something like rebreathing new life.
Oh, yeah.
And the sports team in the Bay Area that does it.
Oh, a rebuilding.
Rebuilding. Oh, this is a renewal.
Yeah.
Rolly and the creative team fly to Florida to watch the old Kitchen Cabaret show.
I love Rolly.
Rolly knows what he's up. What's up? So yeah. God forbid they do that now. Hey, let's see what's already there and maybe not completely ruin it. Like, maybe let's see what's working.
Yeah, kinda... let's get the audience reaction. But now they just go to TikTok and then figure out what the kids are saying.
Right, you got all these Imagineers based in California that never even saw Illuminations, and now they're just making Harmonious. They don't know what they're doing.
Like how you just they probably would have been living there for 6 months.
No, they don't. They don't know what they're doing. All right, anyway, let's just get back
Bitter.
On track.
Party here. Of one.
So Rolly and the creative team, they go to Florida, they watch Kitchen Cabaret, and they think, you know, really, this is a good show. It's not relatable being an old cabaret. The music, the info's a little out of date, but the bones of this idea are good. Let's dust this off. Let's update it. We can do something with this. So they decide to keep the performance concept, but give it a more modern twist. And the concept they come up with is Food Rocks.
It sure does.
Crap.
Yeah, it's a very Rolly idea. I don't know why.
Instead of being a cabaret that extols the virtues of healthy eating, Food Rocks takes the form of a big charity benefit concert in support of healthy eating.
Okay. Oh, yeah. All right. Cool, man. Like Farm Aid, but the reverse.
Food.
But like literally Farm Aid. Yeah.
Many people through the years have drawn comparisons to the 1985 Live Aid concert, which was a benefit concert that brought together these huge musical acts.
Mm-hmm.
So Imagineers have said they never it was never talked about. Like they never necessarily said like, hey, Live Aid's a thing. Let's do something that builds off that. Let's parody that. But what they said was, you know what, we were probably just influenced by it. It was in the zeitgeist of the time. Like this was a thing. So we didn't necessarily deliberately do it, but we were influenced by it. And that's probably why it took this form.
Okay.
The host of our show is none other than Food Rapper. Food Rapper.
Bless.
Oh, no.
What the?
Food Rapper.
Terrence's jaw just dropped.
Bro.
Food Rapper was voiced by real-life rap artist Tone Loc. And if you aren't sure who Tone Loc is,
I don't know who
maybe
that is.
Number three.
You don't know who,
jog
you'll know
your
who Tone
memory.
Loc is.
Here we go.
That's how you, like that, exactly like that, Jeremy.
Yep.
Not a five for my money. So the weekend comes, I go from live with the honey. Rolling down the street, I saw this girl when she was pumping. I winked my eyes, got into the ride, went to a club with jumping. Introduced myself as long, said, you're a liar. I said, I got it going on, baby girl, and I'm a liar. Took her to the hotel, she said, you're the king. So be my queen, if you know what I mean. Let's do the wild thing.
Yep. Classic Disney stuff right there. Very much a Disney artist, you know. Yeah. Let's go pick up girls, go to the hotel, and then work at Disney.
Well, that's not the song that actually appeared in the show. I know, was just playing it so you would know who Tone Loc was.
Yeah,
let's eat some vegetables. Fruit.
But we are
dipping in some ranch dressing. Ranch dressing.
Got that ranch dip.
Wow.
Eating 9 to 5 from my food pyramid. Sorry, Jeremy. Go ahead, please.
The minute I hear that song, I am immediately transported to the 1987 hit movie starring John Candy, Uncle Buck.
Okay.
Ah.
He tells the principal to go downtown. He gives her a quarter. He goes, go downtown and get a rat to gnaw that thing off your face. And then you hear, boom, 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 boom. It's like the greatest scene. I can't. It's just so good. Uncle Buck, man. What a movie. Okay, well, let's take a listen to Tone Loc hosting our show as Food Rapper, number 4.
What a movie.
Now here's your host, Food Rapper.
Hey, thanks, everybody. You know, Your food knows a thing or two about eating right. Take it from the pick of the crop. Ladies and gentlemen, the Peach Boys.
You'll be happy with the food you eat. Mixing different kinds, each meal can be a treat.
Oh, wow. This is already my favorite Spectra time you've ever done.
Yeah, I feel like this is going to be the last. I think this is the only one you do from now on.
I'm just going to keep doing
the same one.
Every single person involved in this project needs to be fired. And if they have resigned or retired or already, hire them and fire them.
I disagree. Oh, fire them.
Amazing. What are you talking about?
Only fire
about?
Them to rehire them and promote them. That's what I
do. Have them do more things.
Have them
There's
do more things.
Stuff like this.
Yeah.
I need to send some money to Tone Loc. Like, I don't know how he's doing financially right now, and I feel bad about what he did 30 years ago. This is horrible.
I'm sure he made enough money to keep him stocked in marijuana.
He's gotta be living well off the Wild Thing residuals.
Well, remember, he had a cartoon where he was a bear.
He did?
Mm-hmm.
He did.
Like I said.
Oh, yeah, I remember the Care Bears. Starring Tone Loc.
Well, and apparently he was in Blank Check.
That's food rapper.
Yeah. Sea Bear and Jamal.
Huh.
So Tone Loc is all right. I'm sure he's doing fine. He's 55 years young. Do you think we can get him on the show?
Yes. Well, hold on. Our special guest, you talked about it earlier, Jason.
Bring him
Hello.
In.
Yeah, hey, how's it going?
Wow.
All right.
I love it.
Could I keep going?
Yeah, go for it, baby.
All right, good. The show kicks off with the Utensils singing a track called We'll Make It Count in the Kitchen, number 5.
Gosh. I can't even do it.
Ew.
Now put your hands together for the Utensils. When you're cooking with us, there's so much you can do.
This is the greatest show Disney's ever done. What happened to it?
I don't like it.
That was a vile violation of Bohemian Rhapsody.
I don't like it anymore.
It was amazing. It was amazing. You guys, they went
Sorry,
there.
Jeremy.
That takes just some cojones. Guys, I'm all about the utensils.
I don't want to see the show. I wanted to be on the stage and watch the audience and just watch the response.
Now, interestingly, though that is not the actual voice of Queen, it is Queen's instrumentals.
Oh, really? Interesting.
They used isolated audio of Queen performing Bohemian Rhapsody, but used the studio voice talent to perform the lyrics. So it's there's a little authenticity for you, Terrence.
Yeah, Terrence.
That definitely was not Freddie Mercury. did not surprise me.
In order to get artists to sign on to the concept of allowing their music to be parodied in such a way, and in some cases to get them to actually perform them, Imagineering had to create test songs with studio voice talent in order to demo the concept to the artists. That was up to our musical director, George Wilkins, who came back. Remember, he did Kitchen Cabaret, so he's back. The other creative Imagineers on the team actually felt guilty for the amount of hours Wilkins had to spend orchestrating and figuring out and recording all these tracks. They did 8 to 10 per artist, but that's 8 to 10 per artist that they were trying to get to sign on. Obviously, not all of them did, but Wilkins is like, don't feel guilty. He was reveling in this. He loved it. He remarked how fun it was to be able to sit around and figure out all these different riffs and then record them. So he's having a great time. I guess it's true what they say. If you love your job, it's never really work. Right, Jace?
Yeah, for sure.
Hold on. I can't. It's too much. So they've got this talented George Wilkins figuring out these tracks and their own voice talent doing their best to recreate these legendary musical acts. Well, during their meeting with Sting, he hears the demo and is like, you know what? You've got really talented voice artists. He's like, they're great. I can't improve on this.
What?
They've done just as good as I would. Go ahead and use them.
Yeah.
Peter Gabriel says the same thing.
I'm sure these are people going like, oh, I couldn't do any better than that. Why don't you keep these people? It's fine. I'm going to, you know, go have tantric sessions with my wife or whatever.
What?
Sting. He's like a tantric.
Edit that out. You can't talk about tantric sessions with your wife on ears up.
I can't.
No. It's just yoga. It's fine.
Yeah, it's just yoga. I didn't say the other word that goes with it.
So Peter Gabriel basically said the same thing. He says, use them. They're great. Number six. Every
bite you take. Oh, my Lord. And every cake you bake. Every milk you shake. Every egg you break will be part of you. Oh, my.
Here's Peter Gabriel.
Keeps getting better. You could have some red beans. A tortilla might be nice. How about a leafy green salad? Or a nice big bowl of rice. All you do is call me. I got everything you need.
Oh my God, it's still going.
You're high fiver.
Yes!
Oh.
So that wasn't Peter Gabriel?
No.
It really did sound like him.
So no, but also in the show, his name is Peter Gabriel.
Oh, Lord.
Of course it is.
Jeremy, this is outstanding. Outstanding work.
Yeah, you wrote all these, right?
Yeah, call me Rolly Crump.
Yeah.
Great. Was, thanks, Rolly.
Like Rolly, but you're just a roll of bread in this show.
Rolly right. Crumble. No, we owe our thanks to George Wilkins, the musical director, and Jim Steinmeier, the show's writer. That's who we owe our thanks to.
So they didn't play like the entire song, right? These are just, you know, minute
long.
Yeah,
and I've even given you less than what was in the show. I've given you the highlights.
Yeah. Thank you. I don't know. I don't know if I want more.
I want to tell you something.
This serving is a perfect amount of serving.
This is great. I know just how much to give you. I've done this before. Now, I will tell you, hearing this show is basically Heimlich's choo-choo train for me. Like, if it was there now, I would never miss this.
Same.
I would be in there like.
So you like Heimlich's choo-choo train?
I was on Heimlich's choo-choo train nonstop. Like, I would always be like, here we go. We're going around again. He's going to burp. It was so great.
All right.
That's the kind of stuff I like.
Yeah, I would do it too. I mean, this should be in Disneyland.
Yeah. I would 100% watch this and be very happy about it.
You'd be like, oh, I don't know. There's a lot. The wait for Soarin' 60 minutes, but there's no wait for Food Rocks. Do you want to do it? It's like, yes. I already fast passed it.
Oh, man. I love everything about it.
Little Richard had a hard.
No. You go ahead.
Had a hard time recording the lyrics. So we got a real one coming in here. Richard, because he had been singing Tutti Frutti for 50 years. And so he's basically on autopilot. He kept having trouble singing. They had to keep redoing it and redoing it to sing the updated Food Rocks lyrics. Number seven.
Little Richard rocks, dude. A wop, bop, a loo, mop, good for you. I want a nice blueberry.
I look
to the west, and everywhere the fruit tastes best. Tutti frutti, oh Rudy. Tutti frutti, woo! Tutti frutti, oh Rudy. Tutti frutti, oh Rudy. Tutti frutti, oh Rudy.
Wow. It didn't really change it much. I mean...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not too different. Yeah. I mean, Tutti Frutti, it already sounds like food.
Yeah.
It's interesting because I have to go back to the Peter Gabriel song because Sledgehammer became high fiber.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if we drove that point home hard enough, but that's I want to be your high fiber.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that.
Which is sure we... the ultimate thing to say to somebody.
Right.
Yeah.
Chubby Checker's actual voice can be heard doing the twist, performed here as Chubby Cheddar in a song called Let's Exercise, number 8.
Let's exercise that one.
Come on, baby. Let's exercise.
Oh.
Come on, baby. Let's exercise. It's really wise to exercise.
This is a man called Chubby. I'm not going to take his workout advice. I'm sorry.
I love that one.
I kind of wish that I didn't tell you what the pun was. And I wish you would have guessed. Like if I said, hey, okay, Chubby Checker's in this. What do you think his name was in the show?
Yes. Mm. If you can do that moving forward, please.
Okay. Will do. Most of the artists were charmed by the creator.
Sometimes your voice inflection are just
insane,
bizarre. Okay, will do.
Will do.
And I don't know if you're excited about it or trying not to laugh, or you just want everyone to shut up so you can finish.
I would say it's an even mixture of all three of those things. Most of the artists were charmed by the creative puns and plays on the names of their groups, like the Peach Boys, Peter Gabriel, and maybe you can guess this one. What was the name that they gave to Neil Sedaka?
Neil Sedaka.
You're never going to guess this, but you're going to love it when you hear it. But let's hear. What would you do?
Nice baklava.
Neil DePasta.
Neil DePasta.
That's very good, Terry.
Yeah, that's a good one.
It's not it, but I like it.
Neil Lasagna.
The classic dish is the veal lasagna. Everyone knows that. It's a classic. Instantly resonates with the entire audience.
Yep.
Parents, do you have a guess, or do you want me to...
I can't beat that. Go ahead. You're
out. You're just calling it.
Hairless Chewbacca, I think.
Let's hear number 9, starring Neil Moussaka.
What's a Moussaka?
I don't know. It's got to be something.
Down, comma, comma, down, down, down. Don't take my squash away from me. Don't you leave me with that broccoli. Eat your spinach, yes, it's true. Vegetables are good for you. Doo-dee-doo, down, down. Comma, comma, down. Doo-dee-doo, down, down. Comma, comma, down.
That was the one and only Neil Moussaka, ladies and gentlemen.
Moussaka, I should know this. It's a Greek dish. It's yeah. Eggplant.
I thought it might be.
It's like an eggplant lasagna thing.
Oh, yes, I've had moussaka, sure.
I don't like eggplant, though. It's like eating snot.
I was basically right.
Yeah, Bev was right.
Yeah.
Veal lasagna, eggplant. It's fine.
We should have the listeners email us with what their guesses could be, or you know maybe they could improve upon these names. Maybe Peter Gabriel could even be something even better.
That's right.
Do a contest.
Peter Gabriel's pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
Due to scheduling conflicts, Cher was not able to provide her vocal talents, but the talented Gloria Bellis from earlier provided a very convincing impression or impersonation of Cher here, number 10.
What's Cher's? Should we guess Cher's name? It's got to be Pear.
Oh, so Cher wasn't a, there wasn't, she, it was like a unique character in the show, and I don't have it here. Right. It all was right. Like Mrs. Rock and Roll or something. Like, it made no sense. Yeah.
All right, here we go.
I'm for dinner, high in protein. Meat can be meat if you keep it lean. Oh, exactly my belief. Whoa, I had some hunk of beef, got some steak or fish, fried chicken and dish, just keep it lean. Oh, yeah.
How about some fish tonight?
Oh, I like a Dover sole.
Like a Dover
sole. I like a Dover sole.
Yeah.
Oh, keep it lean. Oh,
keep what do you think lean. About Gloria Bellis's job as Cher?
I mean, she did all right. I mean,
I think it's very
it's almost spot on.
I thought it was great. Actually, when we listened to the first song, I was like, is this Cher? She has like a Cher quality to her voice. So she did a great job. That was a great choice.
Good job, Gloria Bellis. Gloria Bellis is also the wife of Richard Bellis, who has an extensive list of Disney music. He has composed, what did I write here? He's composed, including the Captain EO pre-show music, Reflections of China, the Indiana Jones Stunt Spectacular, music for the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror, Tomorrow's Child from Spaceship Earth, and music for the Imagination Pavilion. So we love the Bellises. That's true. How about that?
Tomorrow's Child,
shining a brand new day. Now, of course, the artists aren't doing this for free.
Oh, no.
They aren't going to lend their vocal talents or their music to Disney for nothing. In addition to paying the artists for their works, Disney also enhanced their packages with park perks, annual passes. Cher, in particular, negotiated really hard for her perks.
God.
According to Imagineer, she left nothing on the table. She kept going back and wanting more. She was offered 4 annual passes for the park to the park for a year. She negotiated for 10. And she said, I don't want them for 1 year. I want them for as long as this attraction is running at Epcot.
Wow.
Dang.
She kept holding out and holding out and negotiated really hard for everything she could get from Disney. And when they finally agreed and gave her everything she wanted, Cher turned right around and donated it all to charity.
Nice. Wow.
Well, that was nice of her.
Yeah.
Look so Cher.
Dang.
Love and Cher tonight.
That was a she good did. Twist.
She shared.
I didn't see that coming.
What a twist. Yeah. The plot thins.
It thickens like a roux.
The Pointer Sisters, who are no strangers to Epcot fans as they frequently perform at Epcot's annual Food and Wine Festival Eat to the Beat concert series, lent their vocal talents to the show, but they didn't perform their own song. Here, the Get to the Point Sisters perform for a little respect, number 11.
Don't you see?
The baseline's all over the place, man. Up and down, all over. Loved it.
Just a little bit. I like that.
Yeah. So, of course, that was Aretha Franklin's Respect, but it was performed by our wonderful Pointer Sisters who we love. The show did have one original track written by George Wilkins with lyrics by Jim Steinmeier. We Love Junk by XS was the only song written specifically for the show. XS and their junk song serve as the bad guys of the show. Now, originally, they had intended to use Kiss as the bad guys.
Oh, God.
But ultimately, they decided not to do that. So the role, Wilkins and Steinmeier decided that the one group of bad guys should be fictional. They didn't want to cast a real life group as bad. So they made a fictional one and they penned this unique song for that role. Number 12, We Love Junk.
We're tired of this nutrition stuff. We're tired of hearing bunk. We're tired of hearing about exercise. Because you know there's nothing like staying at home. Lying on the couch. Watching the tube. With a great big bowl of fattening, steaming junk.
They're not wrong.
We love junk.
give us sugar and fat.
We love junk.
You got a problem with that.
We love junk.
And we'll be a disgrace.
When there's junk, there's nothing like stuff in your face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Loved it. Every minute of it.
There is nothing like sitting on the couch.
Yeah. Where's the bad guy part?
Full of junk. Like I
did I play pretty, did I play the wrong one?
It's pretty catchy.
That's a great junk song. It's good, man. It sort of sounded like Rolf from the Muppets. Do you know who sung it?
That's a great question. I don't know who. It must have been just the studio, some of the studio voice talent. Yeah. I don't think it was anyone
special.
Famous.
All right.
Several artists did not make the cut, some usually because they didn't want to. They wanted Tina Turner to be. What do you think they wanted Tina Turner to be?
Tina Turnip.
Tina Turnover.
You guys are close. Tina Turnover.
PETA, that's not healthy.
PETA.
PETA, pumpkin.
It's simpler. It's much simpler.
Okay.
Tina Tuna.
Ew.
Bingo.
Tina
really?
Tuna?
Good Tina job, Tuna. Terrence.
Wow. If you want if you want something simple, just go to Terrence.
Yay! Wait, what?
Nothing. Nothing, man.
Tina Tuna was supposed to be singing "What's Meat Got to Do with It?"
Oh my god.
This is not. Yep.
She had dinner, or she was at a get together, a party with the gal who was in charge of getting all the talent. Name was Valerie Johnson Redrow, and she was the media producer. Her job was to convince the singers to do this, and she was actually just at a party, and she pitched this to Tina Tuna, and Tina at first was kind of like, "This is interesting." But ultimately, she said, "It's a little too corny for me, but I love your passion. I'm sorry, I'm not going to do it." Similarly, the Elvis Presley estate would not agree to Elvis Parsley.
Oh, man.
The crap, bro.
I think Elvis would have loved it. Can I eat myself when I'm done?
Right. Exactly. You would never leave that much meat on a pork chop. And that is the music of Food Rocks. And for those of you who are Spectro Radio Patreon supporters, you can access my exclusive Spectro Insider segment on the cue music of Food Rocks.
Dope.
Wow.
So, that was great, Jeremy.
That was insane, Jeremy.
What would our Food Rocks names be?
No, this is great.
Terrence Greenbean.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not going to, I don't want to insult anybody by accident, so I'm not going to say anything.
Jeremy Muffin.
Jeremy Muffin. I don't know. I mean, yeah, I don't know. Jason Pasta. Stupid. Wow,
Taryn Pesto.
Taryn Pesto, there you go.
Taryn Pesto! Stirrin' Pesto.
Chef Stirrin' Pesto. Pesto.
My last name isn't Barry.
Terrence is yearning for a time before Sam.
Aren't we all?
Yeah.
Well, Bev's first name is already a soda.
It's true.
I am. That's right. My last name used to be Barry.
Soda Barry.
Soda
Barry soda.
Yeah.
If you want to say hi to Soda Barry.
And who doesn't? Honestly.
And who doesn't?
I can't believe Jason hasn't come up with something. I feel like this is exactly when your wheelhouse is to up with weird puns.
It is, but I can't. For who? For me?
For you.
For me.
Come on, do it.
I can't do it. I'm on the spot. It's a lot of pressure. I can't do it. Yeah, I don't know, man. Julianne Parsley. Whatever. I don't know. We're going to take a quick...
What a letdown.
I know. We're going to take a quick break, everybody. We're going to be right back with Ears Up Podcast. We're going to be talking about Walt's Nine Old Men, Terrence's part 3 of his series. We'll be right back.
And now, back to the show that ignites your dream wish of imaginations and magical color wonderment of forever. Ears up.
All right, thanks for hanging around, everybody. Terrence, you ready for part three of Walt's Nine Old Men? This is the third old man, I guess.
This is the third old man. Yes, I'm ready. You guys ready?
I'm ready.
All right, I'm going to jump in. All right, so Walt Disney Animation has had lots of different looks over the last 100 years or so. We've seen them go from the first motion, first feature-length cartoons, war films, animated classics, to purchasing Pixar, etc. But for everything that we have seen in and since the golden age of animation, it would be difficult to say that anyone, outside of Walt himself, lent a larger hand in creating and continuing the look and feel of Disney Animation other than Eric Larson. Walt Disney Animation was always on the forefront of pushing the world of animation forward, but Walt did not do it alone. By the 1930s, he had forged a team of animators that developed the style for the short films and eventually feature-length films. This team was called Disney's Nine Old Men. The people that were in this group were Les Clark, Mark Davis, Ollie Johnson, Milt Hall, Ward Kimball, John Lounsbery, Wolfgang Riederman, Frank Thomas, and finally, Eric Larson. So it was 1905, Teddy Roosevelt was president, and a quart of milk cost 7 cents. And on September 3rd, in Cleveland, Utah, Eric Cleon Larson was born. Eric developed his style for animation in high school, working on the yearbook all 4 years. He was even bumped up to the art director his senior year. His passion shifted to writing when he entered the University of Utah as a journalism major. He would still sketch occasionally, but he considered himself a writer first. After graduating, he took an adventure story he had written entitled The Trail of the Viking to KHJ Radio with the hopes of it turning into a regular show. They liked it, but they said that he didn't know how to write for radio. They sent Larson to seek help from Richard Creedon, formerly one of KHJ's best writers, who was now working for the Walt Disney Studios in the story department. Creedon was a very busy man, and he said that he would help Eric when he had time. He also mentioned that Walt is looking for new talent. At first, Larson wasn't really interested. He felt the act of animation was too mechanical. As he said, all you do is sit on your butt and make a drawing that someone else already made. He also wasn't desperate for money, since he was making enough money doing freelance work. But Creedon remarked, the animated film will challenge any creative ability that you have or any ability you can develop. And this intrigued Larson. He submitted some drawings. He earned himself a tryout with the company. After 2 days, he wanted to quit. He started in the in-between department, and it was monotonous and mechanical. Also, George Drake, who ran the department, was difficult to get along with. But he persevered and was officially hired by the company on June 1st, 1933. After about 5 weeks of in-betweening, animator and future Disney legend Ham Lusk requested to have Larson as an assistant. He would do small scenes with him over the course of the next year or so, and then when Snow White came along, he was thrust into full-time animation. He mostly animated large groups of animals interacting with Snow White, but he also worked on each of the dwarves. While he was keen on drawing animals and giving them realistic human emotion, he also moved in directing when Pinocchio was being produced. Here, he animated one of the film's most beloved characters, Figaro. The way he did not simply have Figaro wake up in a scene, but rather emerge from his warm, comfy bed and struggle to open the window for Geppetto was done so well that it drew applause from the studio group when they screened it as simply a rough pencil drawing.
Wow.
Over the years, he was instrumental in the animation of films like Fantasia, Bambi, Cinderella, in which he drew both Cinderella and Prince Charming, Peter Pan, Lady and the Tramp, Sleeping Beauty, and the Jungle Book. Eric was soft-spoken, passive, and sweet. While this made him a joy to work with for most, this also stunted his growth within the company. Despite the fact that he was seen as one of the most important animators at the company, he was often trampled on by other major animators who were clinging on to get their credit and move up the ladder. For instance, all of the work that he did for Ichabod and Mr. Toad went uncredited. And he was replaced as Sleeping Beauty's animating director after working on the film for several years. Now, while his soft-spokenness did not benefit him as it related to his own career path, it did help the department as a whole. He was often the one who was sought out to mediate when tensions rose between co-workers. His push for working together cohesively has been credited as what kept the studio running on course. Now, Walt dies. After Walt dies, the animation team began to give Larson less and less to do, trying to phase him out. But Larson was looking towards the future. Many of the second generation of animators were reaching their retirement years. So instead of trying to cling on to his spot, Eric decided to go a different route. He opted to be the studio's recruiter and the trainer for a new batch of animators coming into the studio in the 1970s. He taught animal anatomy, sight gags, the studio's art style, and how to bring warmth to even the most evil of villains. Near his 15 years between 1970 and 1985 of being the bridge for the studio, he trained some of the greatest animators of our era. For instance, he directly trained Tim Burton from Nightmare Before Christmas, Corpse Bride. He directly trained Brad Bird, who would go on to do The Incredibles, Iron Giant, and Ratatouille. He directly trained Don Bluth, who did The Secret of Nim, An American Tale, Land Before Time, All Dogs Go to Heaven, Titan A.E., and Dragon's Lair. He directly trained Chris Buck, who did Tarzan and Frozen 2. He directly trained Glenn Keane, who did The Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, Pocahontas, Tarzan, and Tangled. And finally, he directly trained John Lasseter, who would leave Disney to create Pixar.
A lawsuit. Okay.
A lawsuit, right?
Yeah.
So despite
Hawaiian shirts.
Right. So despite being pushed around by the old generation, he was now the leader of the new generation, leaving a legacy that reverberated inside and outside of the company long past his death. After his 1986 retirement, he was the longest tenured Disney employee at 53 years.
Wow.
And 2 years later, on October 25th, 1988, he passed away at the age of 83.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Wow. I mean, he worked right up almost to the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he retired and got bored, and so he was like, "Oh, I guess I'll die now." I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes some guys like that just happen. They say that cops do that a lot, where it's like, "Oh, you go for so many years, and then you retire, you have nothing to do, and you sort of just really fall downhill." You know, that's why they say you got to do something.
But it's crazy to me. Like, this dude is not a guy that you hear spoken of, especially, you know, we're a Disneyland podcast. You don't hear him spoken of when it comes to Disneyland proper, but if you look at animation as a whole, inside and out of the studio, I can't think of anyone off the top of my head that has a larger thumbprint on animation than he does. It's absolutely insane the number of people he directly trained, let alone indirectly trained.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Really cool. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right, and that's in addition to all the things that he also just did.
That he also did, right.
And he had a long list of things on his resume, and then he impressioned on so many other people. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we tend to sort of like glorify Imagineers as Disneyland fans and Disney World fans and whatever. You know, we tend to hold them at like this higher level because they're world creating and they're doing these things that we physically see and interact with. But it was the guys who came before that influenced those art design choices, because those are the choices that Walt was selecting for the parks. And it's just this whole like thing, you know, that's why I liked watching the beginning of Mr. Toad, right? Because you see Ward Kimball and, you know, Mary Blair and doing all these people doing all the stuff before the parks were even a thing yet.
Yeah.
It's kind of neat.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
It's awesome. This was one of the three. This was the one that really interested me the most. I started really digging into him, and I just had no idea. I had no idea that he was that influential. Mm-hmm. It was really good.
Well, that's cool, man. So soft-spoken. I feel like that's why. Like, he just doesn't, he's just in the background, kind of.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, he was about the company. He was 100% about the company and making sure the company excelled.
Yeah.
That's cool.
This is the plight of the introverts, okay? We can't get any credit. We just keep our heads down. We work, okay? And then all these extroverts, they don't shut up. It's like, nah, nah, nah. That's the problem.
Since when are you an introvert?
Yeah, I was like, which one of these people are you?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm very much that, like, all I want is credit for it, for stuff. And I never get it. And the more you want credit, the less you get. Mm. It happens.
March in the past, present, and future with all the news that's fit to cover. It's the Ears Up Disney News. Pause.
All right. We got one Disney News article.
When it's time to change.
Ava Lagila. Whenever I hear Ave Maria, I always think of, like, they should be saying, like, Hava Nagila. I don't know why. Like, the first part of the word sound the same to me. Ava Nagila. It'd be funny. Anyway, whatever. I have one serving, and then I'll have two servings, and I'll have three servings of broccoli and vegetables.
No, that's probably, you'd have gefilte fish or something.
Yeah, whatever.
real Jewish food.
All right, here we go, fellas. Walt Disney Company's U.S. theme parks will offer an option to pay for quicker access to some of the most popular rides. This was announced yesterday. And by the way, there's our special guest. We'll be dialing in shortly here. The feature is part of the rollout this fall of Disney Genie, a digital tool designed to help park visitors maximize their time at Disney's U.S. parks, now operating at a limited capacity due to the pandemic, of course. Disney Genie will be free through the Disneyland and My Disney Experience apps. An upgrade called Disney Genie Plus will provide access to lightning lanes for quicker entry at specific time to more than 15 attractions at DCA and over 40 rides at Walt Disney World in Florida. Disney Genie will cost $15 per day per ticket at Disney World and $20 at California's Disneyland. So we have... It's $5 more for us, everybody, and less rides. But that's just what happened. So we've been reporting on this, something similar to this, Jer, on In Depth for a couple episodes, where they're testing out this, like, pay for line skipping thing like they do at Disneyland Paris.
Yeah.
Which is interesting to just sort of see it implemented here. The new line options will replace the quicker Fast Pass lines at both parks and the Max Pass queues at Disneyland. Max Pass launched in 2017, and that was $20 a day. The free Disney Genie service also aims to cut wait times by steering guests to their most coveted experiences at the optimal moment. Disney chief executive Bob Chapstick, who previously ran the theme park divisions, told analysts last week, quote, "Guests are going to spend less time waiting and more time having fun." And I don't believe that for a second, but that's okay. You know, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, so that's what's happening. We got Disney My Genie Plus or whatever the hell it is. And already when this news was announced, people were asking online for our opinion. And so I wanted to wait for this show. I'm bringing, of course, former Imagineer Kyle back on the program. Kyle, what's up, dude?
Hey, how's it going?
How are you, man?
Hi, Kyle.
I'm doing well.
I haven't seen you in a long time, man. Yeah.
I know, it's been a while.
Yeah, it's been too long, man. It's been too long. But thanks for coming. You and I were chatting earlier today about this, and Kyle's just, like, giving me all this, like, well, you know, if you have a 60-minute ride and a 10-minute ride, and then you take the crux of the thing, and you might, like, and he's like, oh, did you want me to?
Yeah, did he have all those spreadsheets again?
For real.
Well, then he goes,
I could pull them out.
He goes, do you just want me to be on the show? You want to be on a guest? I'm like, yes, because I don't really get it. But we were talking specifically about how this will impact the feel in the park and the wait times for the things. Because just to be clear, you're now able to pay for something that used to be free, which is the Fast Passes. Fast Passes are gone, but now you can pay $20 to access the Fast Passes, I guess, right?
Right. And you still can't get it for every attraction that you used to get it for either, because some attractions are pay for only.
So some attractions are that lightning lane thing that they're talking about, okay? Which we don't even know the prices for that yet, right?
I saw Oh, go ahead, Tara.
Hold on. I don't like to be this guy, but Lightning Lane is the dumbest name I have ever heard for anything ever in my life.
Yeah, bro.
Thank you. This is the problem I have with this whole thing is it's a nomenclature. It's like Fast Pass, My Disney Experience, My Magic Plus, Disney Plus, Genie Plus. Like, get a name. Like, just leave it. Just be like, you know what? We're charging you for Fast Pass now, so shut up. I can't with it. Stop it with the names.
Is this the after hour show? Are you allowed to curse right now?
No, not yet. No.
I censored myself.
Sort of.
Yeah, that was a good censor, Jer. Almost let it rip a Rooney. But yeah, so and that's my question to you, Kyle, is how do you think this is going to impact the wait times for the rides?
So if you remember last time when I was on, I talked about something called induced demand. And for people who aren't familiar with this, it's a phenomenon that happens that basically says that people want to fill a space. So the idea with a theme park attractions and induced demand is that when you go to Disneyland, let me ask everybody here, how long is the line for Space Mountain at Disneyland?
I mean,
at least 60 minutes.
60 minutes.
Everybody just said 60 minutes, right? So the thing is that no matter how busy the park is, whether it's super busy or super light, it's going to be 60 minutes. And the reason that is that people want to ride Space Mountain. And there's so many people who want to ride Space Mountain that what's capping it out is that people just don't want to wait longer than 60 minutes. So they go visit something else that the line's longer than 60 minutes. So now let's just talk about a line, right? Space Mountain can take, let's say, 2,000 people an hour. And that's actually pretty close to the actual number.
Okay.
So if you have a standby line and you only have the standby line, that line can hold 2,000 people in it. And those 2,000 people wait 60 minutes and they get on. Now, if you introduce FastPass to that ride and they do what's called a 1-to-10 ratio with FastPass, which means that for every 10 parties of standby, they let a FastPass person through, right? So now all of a sudden, instead of 2,000 people being in that line, you have only 1,500 people in that line, but it's still 60 minutes. Mm. So what this program actually does is it's going to kick people out into the park and just like FastPass did, and because of that line mix ratio. So the lines are going to be shorter, so the park area is going to be longer. Now, what's interesting is that less people are going to be using this probably than the original FastPass. So because it's a paid for option, right?
Right.
Like not everyone's going to buy it when most people probably use FastPass because it was free. So because of that, and because you have less people using it, you're probably going to see kind of a middle ground where Space Mountain is still going to be 60 minutes. It doesn't matter. But if you go ride Pinocchio is not induced demand because it's basically just people filling the ride based on what's going on.
Right.
So on a really busy day during FastPass, that line might have been 30 minutes. But during COVID, when they weren't doing any FastPass, that line was averaging 5 or 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. You're probably going to see somewhere in the middle there. You're probably going to see like a 15-minute line for that ride. Mm-hmm. And that's really good where you're going to feel the difference of this is on all those little attractions that don't have FastPasses and everything else in the park that doesn't actually require FastPasses. Because what FastPass basically does is it creates a ghost copy of yourself that's waiting in that line for you so that you can go do other things. So all those people who were supposed to be taking up that space, that extra 500 in that little equation I just gave, those 500 are out going on other rides or visiting shops and stores and stuff like that. And it just crowds up the park. But since less people will be using this, the standby experience will be a little bit better. But again, you know, you used to be able to wait 15 minutes to get on Space Mountain, and now you're going to have to wait 60.
You know, unless you're paying. So,
you're paying $20.
You're probably going to be having some of these, like you're saying, the smaller rides. So what? Winnie the Pooh and Pinocchio. That's pretty much it. Everything else sort of has like a big line, right?
Anything that doesn't
have
a fast pass. I mean, Jungle Cruise, Pirate. Well, so Jungle Cruise and Pirates might be a little different because those probably are induced demand. Like Pirates is usually 40 minutes, doesn't really get up beyond that.
Yeah.
But Winnie the Pooh is a good example. The train's a good example. Autopia is another one. You know, all those rides that don't have fast passes. Small World.
Okay. We're probably going to see longer lines for those. But in our conversation earlier, you were saying that these lines will probably be moving a little faster because there's not the 500 people ahead in that line, right? So you're not going to be standing, because that's sort of the worst of like in cars or Ridgeway racers or whatever it is, right?
I actually was just about to use that as an example. So like I actually went during the pandemic and I waited 60 minutes to get on cars. But the thing was, is that the line was moving so fast because, you know, every single time they loaded, they were taking from standby. So you just kept moving and walking that it was actually really nice. A 60 minute line wasn't in those two buildings at the end. It was the whole entire queue and a bunch of overflow. So you just kept walking the whole time and you kept seeing different things. And it really wasn't nearly as bad as it feels just standing there. I mean, the worst thing is when you go somewhere like the DMV and you're standing in the same spot for 20 minutes just waiting and you have no idea when you're going to go next. If the line's moving, it feels so much better in my opinion.
Yeah. Kyle, I have a question.
Yeah.
What would your Food Rocks name be?
Do you think that Disney has ever considered the idea of spending their efforts on building high capacity attractions rather than just trying to reinvent lines?
Case in point, they built the Omnimover system. They designed the Omnimover system. Disneyland and Disney World have some of the most highest capacity attractions in the world, and nobody even comes close. California Screaming, for instance, is by far the highest capacity roller coaster by leaps and bounds compared to anything else. There's no other coaster out there that runs six trains on the track or at the same time and pulls that many people through. If you go to Six Flags or Knott's, you're seeing a two train, maybe three train operation at most. And usually one's in the station, one's running on the track, and it takes the train to get all the way back to the station before they finally let the other train go because they're just so slow at loading cars. So sure. Disneyland actually really focuses on capacity with their attractions. I can tell you that Imagineering and the parks actually look at the throughput numbers of their park every day. And they have targeted goals on how many attractions the average guest gets to go on. And the goal is that an average guest is supposed to visit somewhere between 8 and 12 attractions, depending on the length of the day. So a full length day, that's 12 attractions.
Wow. So thank you for that, Kyle. It puts a little bit more in perspective. I mean, on the one side, I think it's terrible because it was free. It was a free thing. And we've talked about this since the inception of this show. Disney likes to give you stuff and then take it away and then charge you for the thing that used to be free and then charge you more money. That I don't like. But I think the service is, I don't know. If they would have treated it like MaxPass, where they include all the photos and stuff, I think that's sort of a no-brainer.
Well, they do. This is basically MaxPass.
I didn't think it had the photos. Do you really?
Yeah, you get the photos. As far as Disneyland is concerned, this is MaxPass.
Okay.
It's the exact same system, except for whatever those attractions are that they're not including for whatever reason. And those are pay your way.
Right, okay.
And then, of course, also now it's MaxPass or bust because there's no free FastPass option anymore.
Right. Oh. Yeah.
Well, if it includes the photos, then...
I hate to say it. It's reasonable. I mean, it's a reasonable thing. I mean, the Express Pass for Universal is like $70 or something.
Yeah, it can be more than that depending on the day. I mean, crazy. I will say that compared to other parks, it is the cheapest option. But I totally agree with you that it's a bit much, and simply asking guests to pay extra money to ride Cars. Cars is one of the attractions they called out saying was going to have the Lightning Lane Plus.
Yeah.
Simply asking guests to shell out for that attraction specifically is something that they haven't done since, ticket books. And that's a bit unusual. So
weird.
It feels weird.
I don't like it. It feels like a money grab, just like you guys are saying. It doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel nice. I'll tell you that I was an annual pass holder my whole life, other than when I was working for the Mouse. And we actually, Greg and I decided, in 2019 in October that we were going to be done. And that's when our passes expired and we didn't renew. Wow. So we lucked out because, you know, park shut down in March anyway, but we were like, we're going to do a year off right now.
Yeah.
And now we did a year off and we're looking at the Magic Key passes and this, and I'm kind of shaking my head and I don't think I'm going to pony up for an annual pass here. So.
Yeah. It feels weird. I mean, someone made the point, like it could have been worse. But still, $20, it just seems, it's one of those numbers where it's like, well, it's low enough where it seems reasonable, but it's still high, and there's no need, like, why?
It can always be worse. It could have been worse is something that, you know, you say, I'm just going to say it, it's a defeatist thing, you know? Yeah. It can always be worse. We could be sitting here talking about $25, but the next thing we could be talking about is that they're going to charge you for, I don't know, to use the bathrooms, and it's going to be only 10 cents. Yes. And we'll be saying, well, it could have been worse. It's only 10 cents. You
correct.
Know? It could just really escalate.
Yeah. I guess I just assumed that fast passes were always going to be free.
It's been free for 20 years.
Wow. That's weird. Been around for 20 years. That's crazy.
1999.
Wow. That's wild to me.
It's funny. Cause there's so many people who still don't know what they are. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Wild.
It's kind of interesting. And a lot of people think you have to pay for it, even though it was always free. And now Disney kind of just went, well, might as well make people pay for it.
Well, and like not everybody used fast passes. And so I wonder how many people are going to be buying this. I mean, there is a ceiling about how much money you're willing to spend before you even get into the stupid park.
The nice thing is that if you didn't use fast passes beforehand, like you never used it, this is your first time hearing about it, and you're going to the park now, and you never went during COVID, and now you're going to go to the park, and you're going to go, and you're not going to use a fast pass, yeah, you're going to have a better experience than you did in 2019 right before this, because mm-hmm, it's going to be lighter to you compared to 2019.
Interesting.
But for everybody else who just doesn't want to buy it or can't afford it or whatever, it's definitely going to hurt, you know? And it sucks.
Yeah.
Disney's kind of the victim of their own problem, of their own creation here. They've been having this issue now for about 5 years where the parks are just simply too popular and they can't manage the crowds. And they're trying to come up with any creative solution that they can to manage crowds. And one of the easiest ones to do, and one of the ones that's best for them, is simply to drive up costs. And that's exactly what they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. Well, anyway, Kyle, thanks, man.
Yeah,
I appreciate it. I appreciate it.
What do you do without an annual pass? Do you have hobbies or something?
Yeah, I have hobbies. I do. You know, I do. I have these other things in
you
life.
Have, like, things you do?
Yeah, you know, it's just like, it's like,
yeah, when you go on trips.
Books are good. Trips, yeah, are good. Yeah, okay. Trips, yeah, are good. You
live,
know,
a life.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's like, it's kind of interesting. So I've grown up in Southern California, so I've been spoiled as hell. And literally, I would, before I would literally at 3 p.m. chat up with my husband and be like, hey, you want to go to Disneyland tonight? And we'd be like, yeah, let's go. And we'd get off work at 5, drive to the park, get there at 6, go on a ride, grab a drink, some food, another ride or two, and then head home. And that could be any night of the week, and we'd do it all the time. Or we'd wake up in the morning early and go in for 2 hours to just catch the morning run to get on a bunch of attractions and then leave. And that's always been a part of my life, my whole life, because I grew up here and I was fortunate enough and lucky enough that I've been able to afford this and grew up with a family that was able to afford this. And I've been very thankful for that. And I've kind of realized that that's a unique privilege, and I feel kind of bad for being part of the problem now, but I mean, you know, I had to shift my whole thought with the park, which isn't my first time doing this, since, as some of you know, I had a bad experience with Imagineering.
Yeah.
So, so it's kind of like, I kind of saw this coming. Let's just put it that way.
That's wild, man. Yeah. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. If you guys want to do it, do it. I mean, you know, I don't know. What am I gonna tell you not to do it? Not to do stuff? If you want to do it, do
great
it.
Advice.
You know what? I'm going to be honest, too. If you buy FastPass, it's probably going to be the best FastPass experience you've ever had. Or whatever, Genie.
Yeah, the Genie Plus or whatever.
I'm with Jeremy. They should have just stayed at FastPass. Call it FastPass Plus. That's what you do. It's easy.
I don't know what's going on. How many is it going to be a new app? Like, how many different things can we have?
And why
no one understand what's going on?
I don't mind them calling it, like, Lightning Lane. Like, Lightning Lane's fine. And Lightning Lane's Plus is fine. I get that you need to rename it. But when you start bringing in Genie to it and all this other stuff, it just gets really confusing way too fast.
Stupid.
Yeah. And they have too many systems that they keep changing the name of FastPass, FastPass Plus.
Yeah, it's so confusing now.
MaxPass,
My Disney Experience,
PhotoPass.
My Magic Plus.
Yeah.
Genie, like it's a Genie Plus. Like, what is happening?
Yeah, you're asking a lot.
I just want to go and ride pirates. Leave me alone.
My magical day dream pass forever.
It's just going to be a phone next Wonder time. Me. You're going to have to bring your Disney phone, and it has all your stuff on it.
And what's the magic key? Like, what is that?
Oh, we've already talked about that. Yeah, we've went on that for a little bit. It's weird, man. All right. Fact of the show, everybody. Disneyland used to allow smoking most anywhere in the park, so many shops and restaurants had books of matches, and each land had a cover with their own unique design on it. Club 33 had the best ones of all, of course. Not only were they personalized with your name stamped on the cover in gold ink, but the tips were gold, and they sparkled when you struck one.
What?
Yeah, I know. Now they just give you, like, that. The little, like, paper thing. Yeah, I don't know why.
Wow.
Yeah, anyway, wild stuff. Speaking of things that they used to give you and they take away, but that's Club 33, so what are you going to do? Anyway, thank you very much, everybody, for tuning in. Don't forget to ask for the 21st Amendment beers wherever you find good craft beer, like DCA. Kyle, thanks for joining us. Jeremy, you did a great job. Terrence, you did a great job. And for anyone listening live, we're going to just jump right into the secret show and make the drink and come back, or we're going to do it. So the link is already in Patreon. Check that out, and we'll see you over there. Thanks a lot, everybody. Until next time, we'll see you in the parks.